note the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, the best podcast in the world, and we're brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Marunzi, alongside me as always, the three-time NBA champion, BJ Armstrong, and fresh home from his hometown of Detroit, the one and only Mr. Scott Perry. I've seen you in the arena shining. I've seen you getting honored. You weren't in the parking lot in Detroit. You've come a long way from that. Congratulations, exactly. Scott. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Guys, it's great to be here today on this podcast. And if I can just talk a couple moments, man.
About
my experience in Detroit over the weekend, man.
Yes,
it
sir.
Was phenomenal, man. Anytime you can catch up with that group of people, man. We had a special group that won a championship together 20 years ago. And to see everybody pretty much back there together, you know, we had a few omissions because of scheduling conflicts, but everybody was back. Everybody else was back there enjoying one another, sharing stories, great memories. The embrace from the Detroit fan base and community was awesome. I mean, it just made you feel, you know, special all over again. And, you know, it was very reflective for me, you know, having worked other places since Detroit, to be able to step back and really just look at the group. And a few things stood out to me when I was doing that. Mm-hmm. First of all, the unique closeness that group still has to this day. Unbelievable. Just how everybody gets along. I mean, coaches, players, front office. We all were just, you know, everybody talks about being a big family and supporting one another. No, that we live that. And I think still live that to this day, man. The way people care about one another, everybody keeps up with one another. I mean, it's really a terrific thing to be a part of. And then, you know, BJ and I talk about this a lot in terms of winning teams, winning cultures, and what goes into that, and the importance of having leadership at all levels of your organization, or at least two of the four levels that you have. So the four levels that we've always identified, obviously it starts with the ownership. Then you have your front office. Then you have your coaching staff, and then you have your players. Well, being around that group in Detroit, we had great leadership at all four of those levels, which was unique. Mm-hmm. Terrific owner and Bill Davison. Joe Dumars was the president of basketball operations, did a terrific job in leading from his role. Larry Brown is the head coach, leading that coaching staff. And then the players, I mean, we had great character players, and you had guys who were great leaders. Chauncey was the more vocal leader. Ben Wallace was the heart and soul leader of that team. And like I said, guys followed that. And the beauty of it is everybody worked together. Everybody respected each other's space. So the front office didn't get into the space of the coaching and of the players and vice versa. And that's why it all worked, because everybody respected each other's roles and responsibilities. And we got along, you know, while we were doing our work, away from work, you know, when we spent time socially. And just being back together with all that again, man, was awesome, man. And it's a lifetime memory and something I just feel blessed to be a part of. And I'm glad you guys gave me a few moments to share it, man, because it was an awesome time. And last thing, special thanks to Tom Gores and the Pistons organization for putting this event on for us and recognizing us first class by them. And so, you know, wishing them nothing but the best moving forward.
Absolutely. And for those newer fans who weren't around in 2004, the 2004 Pistons won an NBA championship, and they're one of the most unique teams to win an NBA championship. Nowadays, you see, you really need a true quote unquote superstar to lead you to the promised land. But the Pistons of 04, they were a team where every single person contributed, as Scott alluded to, the whole way through the organization, but they were founded on defense, which is why they're one of my favorite teams of all time to watch. But let's get into what's happening in the NBA right now. Because just last week, we made our list of the top contenders. And one of them starting to crumble.
Okay.
BJ, your favorites right now. Over there on the West Coast, the LA Clippers.
Who we got?
Let's talk about the LA Clippers since the All-Star break. They blew a 21-point fourth quarter lead to the Lakers. They blew a 13-point fourth quarter lead to the Bucks, who didn't have Giannis Antetokounmpo. And they blew a 22-point lead to the Timberwolves. They only scored 4 points in the final 4 minutes against the Pelicans, but still went on to lose. And they were down 29 points at home to the Trae Young-less Atlanta Hawks. Guys, what's going on? BJ, we've got to start with you. What's going on over there in LA right now? What's happening to the Clippers? Because just a month ago, they were going on this huge run. They were up there with the best in the Western Conference. We're looking at them like serious contenders. And now after the last game, Paul George says, we want to be a team that's consistent. We want to establish an identity. Right now, I don't think we have an identity. With a month to go to the playoffs, that's pretty worrying.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to push the panic button here and go to that level. And here's why. This is a veteran team. This team understands, they understand the mission. They understand the assignment. The assignment is very clear. This is a championship caliber team. And if they don't win a championship, it's a bust. Okay, there's no in between. Their owner has pushed all of their chips to the middle of the table. They've gone out and figured out how to get every good player, great player in their eyes and their estimation. They've figured out how to, they figured out how to get Kawhi. They figured out how to get Paul George. They figured out how to get the latest James Harden.
They got Russell Westbrook. They got Daniel Tice.
They figured out how to get everything available. They have a terrific coach. There's nothing else to talk about here. Now, what we can talk about is this responsibility lies on those players. Nothing's wrong with these players other than when the lights are the brightest, we're going to see who's going to step up. So I'm not going to push the panic button and say, oh, they're losing now in the regular season, because if this team has to figure out how to get 16 wins. We've seen teams falter at the later part of the season. I'm sure they don't have any interest. I'm sure that this team is probably looking forward to the playoffs, and they're gearing up for that. Now, for better or for worse, when things are good, we say we overhype it, and then things are bad, then we're all of a sudden, oh, what's going on here? I'm just going to say this team will be evaluated by my standards, and I don't know how you guys feel, on what they do once the playoffs begin. I don't care how they finish this regular season. I really don't. Mm-hmm. But what I do care about is when those lights come on, I want to see playoff P. I want to see the claw, the robot, what they call it,
The claw.
Is that what they call him now?
Yep.
I want to see James Harden telling me I want to see the system.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. And then I'm going to find out everything. So this team is terrific. They have faced adversity early in the season. I mean, they went on a losing streak early on when that trade was made, and they figured it out.
Yep, they did.
So they're capable.
They went on a 31 game stretch where they went 26-5. Okay. But then over their last 17 games, they're 7-10. Now, Scott, from a front office perspective, obviously they haven't had the best injury luck. Russell Westbrook is out indefinitely with a broken hand. Mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have missed a bit of time here and there. Norman Powell missed a game. But when you look at the team and you look at not necessarily the box score, but the energy and the passion that Russell Westbrook brings to that squad, they haven't been playing with that same level of enthusiasm since he went out with an injury. Now, from your expertise and all the successful teams you've been in charge of in the NBA, how big of a difference can that make to a squad, even if it's just one player? You talked earlier about Ben Wallace being the heart and soul leader of the Detroit Pistons team that won a championship in 04. But how much are they missing Russell Westbrook right now when they're losing all these games?
As I listened to BJ and you, I was thinking that whole time about the absence of Russell Westbrook and what he really means to this team. I mean, his energy is infectious throughout that team. Because when you look at their top three players in Harden, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they're more low-key individuals. They're easygoing, super talented, super skilled. And they're
more lead by example kind of guys.
They're more, yes, exactly. But Russell Wilson, I mean,
Russell Wilson.
That's my Steeler slipper. But Russell Westbrook, I'm sorry, exactly. Russell Westbrook is that emotional leader for that team. And we really see now just how much they miss him. And I'm a little bit concerned for the team that they can make a deep run without his presence. Now, from all accounts, and BJ could probably verify this better than me because he's out in LA, but from all accounts, Russ is expected to be back prior to the start of the playoffs or right before then. They're going to need him because it's interesting. Every team has its own personality, and every player on that team provides a role and plays a role. And that's what Russ does for that team. He forces them to play faster in transition, especially that second unit. You know, when he enters the game, that the team on the other side is not going to out-compete you and out-hustle you. But that's what you're seeing happening to the Clippers during this latest lull. They're being, teams are out competing them, getting to loose balls. They're playing at a faster pace. So he is key to this basketball team, I think, winning those 16 games or having a chance to win those 16 games that BJ talked about and becoming champions.
So here's the thing. Here's my biggest concern. And BJ, I know you just said you're not worried about the regular season. But over the last 11 games against plus 500 teams, so teams with a winning record who have won more games than they've lost, they're 3-9. And then the Western Conference is where it gets really tricky. We saw the Pelicans destroy them, shout out to Zion Williamson, and they're 1-3 against the Pelicans. And as things stand, that they would be the 4-5 matchup against them. They just can't seem to figure out a way. If Zion Williamson's playing, they cannot slow him down. They're 1-3 against the Timberwolves. They're 1-2 against the Thunder. They're 1-2 against the Denver Nuggets. So as good as that winning streak was that they had earlier in the regular season where they won 26 out of 31 games, the fact that they can't get it done against the upper echelon of the Western Conference, is that not a reason to be concerned about this team?
Well, I don't want to make it like I don't want it to seem like I don't value the regular season, because I do. I place a lot of value on the regular season. However, with this team, this is a veteran group. And Scotty alluded to it, that every team takes on its own personality. Now, there's two things you can't coach. You can't coach effort and you can't coach energy. And as I was listening to Scott, answer the question, I realized that Russell Westbrook.
See, my Steelers have been in the news late, as we know.
Russell Westbrook provides, one, he provided leadership. He requested to go to the bench, if you guys recall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Good point.
So whether he meant to do it or not, he became the leader of this group. Okay. When he arrived here last year, I think it was last year, Russell was the best player on their team, the most consistent player on their team, just a year ago when he arrived here.
Yeah, George and Kawhi were out with injuries for periods, and then throughout
Russell,
the playoffs,
Russell
he was really
more or
it.
Less he Russell mm-hmm. more or less saved their season last year. He was the catalyst for that. Okay. Mm-hmm. This year, Russell provides the effort and energy because he holds the starters accountable. If Paul George is not bringing it, you bring in Russ. If James Harden isn't bringing it, you bring in Russ. You're not losing much. Okay. If in some regards you're actually gaining, because he's playing with such effort and energy that he forces you. It's like, in fact, it's like Ben Wallace. Like, yeah, he's not scoring, but his energy and effort, everyone's like, oh, wow, Ben's working. I got to get working too. It's kind of like passing,
Mm-hmm.
So Russell, to me, is showing you his importance of what he brings and how valuable he is to this group. They have talent. And I'm not going to be concerned about this because it's hard for me to believe that Russell is not going to play. Russell is probably going to play whether his hand is broken or not.
Okay? He'll play one hand.
That's
exactly.
Just,
right.
That's
right.
That's just his. You know, I don't even like this term, but he's a throwback. I mean, this guy just loves to play. Okay, Russell just loves to play. And this is what you do when you love to play. As long as you can't hurt it anymore, it's not career injury, just tape it up and let's go. That's his mentality. So I expect them to bring it, but I expect them to perform at a high level. Now, as you know, sometimes you can go through a season. I remember we went through seasons in my playing days where we didn't beat teams on the West Coast. However, when we met that team in the finals, we were able to defeat those teams, or we met those teams in a playoff type atmosphere, even in our own conference. So the playoffs are different. I think this team will be ready, but more importantly, I know they have big time performers. Kawhi Leonard is a big time performer. Okay. Big time. And if those guys are healthy, they're going to be a tough out. I don't care who they're playing, but let's make no doubt about it. They have to win. Getting to game seven doesn't matter. Putting up a good fight, playing hard, doesn't matter. This team has to win 16 games. And that's the lens in which I'm looking at this team under.
Well, no, I think that is the point there. And I do think, you know, it's only human nature that's weighing on the minds of each and every one of those players in that locker room. They right. know that. They know the expectations from Steve Ballmer, from the front office, from the fan base, from the coaching staff, and more importantly, from themselves, to validate themselves. In particular, you know, Kawhi Leonard has won a championship. Now, I'm sure he wants to win more, but the other guys have yet to win one.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think that doesn't weigh heavily on their minds, and, you know, and they're probably peeking ahead a little bit now and saying, mm-hmm. okay, to what BJ is saying, okay, let's finish out this regular season, but our legacy is going to be measured what happens in the latter part of April, full month of May, in the entire June. That's where their legacy is going to lie.
Well, Paul George is saying they don't have an identity right now. Your identity can't be a bunch of guys who want to save their legacy by getting a championship. Your identity has got to be more than that, surely.
Oh, you know, your identity is how you compete and how you're going to play every single night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, see, when people talk about identities and cultures and all that, it's about what you do on a daily basis. It's not about, you know, and it just so happens that the championship teams that either I've been a part of or I've witnessed from afar or competed against, they all just happen to have a particular identity that they live by on a daily basis. They practice by it. They play the games by it. They go, you know, away from the floor. It's and BJ can attest to this, you know, better than I can. He was a 3-time champion. But it is a way of life. Not, you know, it's not, okay, we win a championship and, oh, by the way, this was our identity. No, your identity that you live by and you work towards every day is what establishes you and it dictates your journey. And your ultimate end of that journey is becoming a champion. So that's how I look at it. I don't know what Paul George is referring to when he says that.
Well, speaking of
no identity, when you say he's saying they don't have an identity right now.
Yeah, he said we don't have an identity is what he said. So I'm a little bit concerned about the Clippers, but you know, Scott.
I'm concerned with that statement. If that's what he said, and you know, maybe that, you know, again, I don't know the context of that when he said that maybe in an interview. But Paul George has been around enough. He was with a very good Indiana team with some very good veterans when he was a young player that I think went to the
Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes, Eastern Conference Finals when he was in Indiana. So he knows, he understands what, you know, identity looks like and the importance of it. So,
well, speaking of doing every day, we do this podcast every day, Monday to Friday. And we also have everyone in the Discord talking about basketball, sharing their hot takes, sharing their opinions every day. So if you want to join that, hit the link below. And I wanted to give a shout out to all of you guys and all of you guys who follow along on Twitter and whatnot, who was showing me mad love. I did a TV show on Sunday night, the Mavericks versus the Nuggets. The networks finally realized what they're missing. But I told them we've got to bring BJ and Scott for the next one. However, mm-hmm. I just wanted to shout out all the listeners and all the watchers who are showing love on social media. But the game ended in an absurd fashion, right? Because we were all going in there expecting the Denver Nuggets, the reigning champions, to take care of business. And then Kyrie Irving on the buzzer with the left hand, like a hook shot kind of floater from behind the free throw line over Nikola Jokic. An insane game winner. And just an hour before that, Bam Adebayo hit a deep three, which you never see him do ever, to win the game against your Detroit Pistons. So it got me thinking.
I saw that live, yes.
It got me thinking. How heartbreaking, by the way, Scott, because that would have been huge if you honor the team and then beat the Miami Heat.
Absolutely. That was a tough one. Tough man, to swallow, man.
Man, I saw that Bam shot and I thought he's been taking tips in the parking lot from Scott. That's the only explanation. But it got me thinking, and BJ, you alluded to this earlier when you said Kawhi is a big-time player and a big shot maker. If you had to make a list right now of your top five most clutch players in the NBA, currently, if you were a coach and you've got 10 seconds, 5 seconds left on the clock, you're down by one, you've got to give the ball to one of your players and they've got to get you a win. Let me hear your top five clutch players right now. Scott, let's start with you because BJ once again missed the pre-production discussion that we have to plan the show. So while you think about your answer, BJ, I'm putting you on blast to the people. Scott, you go first.
Well, you know, a couple things first. And just to share with the listeners, I know we're not really considering catch and shoot guys, or really the center guys who play the center position who don't.
We go in 1-4 flat. We go in 1-4 flat.
Yeah, 1-4 flat.
The guys got to have, and you're on the island by yourself.
Who's going? Yeah, exactly. Who's going to have that ball in his hands? So we were just talking about the Clippers. So Kawhi Leonard would be one of my five. I'm not putting him in any particular order, but he can get to his spot.
You're going to give us an order.
No, I'm with BJ on the pre-production. I'll come back to my order, but I'm going to give you the five names right now.
Okay.
All right, let me sit. Yeah. So I've got Kawhi Leonard. He's strong. He handles the ball well enough. He can get to the spots he needs to get to on the floor. You know, he's capable of shooting a three if he needed it. You know, like I said, he can elevate over his defender. If he gets stuck with the ball on the block, he has good enough footwork and post moves to where he can score for you on the block. Another player, I can't ignore Kevin Durant. 7-footer, can go get his own shot. He can score from anywhere on the court. So Kevin's got to be in there. I mean, he's arguably the best scorer of this era and this time, in my opinion, just pure offensive player. He's efficient. He's got to be on my list.
That's a whole nother debate for another day. But let's keep it moving.
I got it. I get it.
I'm holding it in right now.
Okay, hold it in. You guys can try to beat it up. Luka Doncic. I'm going to go with Luka Doncic. You know, there's a guy that he wants the ball in his hands. He wants the big shot. He wants the big moment. And that's important to me as a coach, who I'm going to put that ball in his hands late to win the game. I want a guy who wants it and can live with the results and is comfortable living with the results, whether it goes in or not. So Luka is on my list.
Two more spots.
Two more. Now, this one will be controversial just because maybe he is not healthy enough all the time, but just going over the course of his career, he again shows up in the big moment. He did it for you in your game yesterday, and that's Kyrie Irving. Gets to anywhere he wants to on the floor. Can shoot the three. As we saw yesterday, he gave you a left-handed hook from 15 feet to win it. But again, he embraces that moment. So I've got Kyrie is the fourth name on my list. And I'm going to put a new gun on there. And a lot of it, from what I see in his early career, and then watching him this summer in the World Cup, but how he wanted the responsibility of winning and losing games. And that's one, Anthony Edwards. Strong, athletic, can get to wherever he wants to on the court, capable of shooting it from three, obviously. But again, that strength and being able to get to anywhere on the court is important to me. And that coupled with that mentality of, hey, I want the ball. I'm willing to take the shots, the big shot, and live with the consequences. So that's my five.
And we just talking about offense because Anthony Edwards made a huge defensive play to save block against the Pacers.
That's right. He has the mental makeup for those moments. Mm. And I got some honorable mention names that maybe you guys would mention.
Well, let's see. BJ, how many of those names make your top five? Scott had Kawhi, KD, Luka, Kyrie, and Anthony Edwards. How many of those names are you keeping in your top five?
All right. Before I get to that, okay. I got a lot to say, but I we don't have enough time. We don't have the time. The listeners, you know, they about their money. They transition into somewhere. They listen. They like, man, let me hear what this guy got to say. All right, one. Well, there's no particular order, but I'm just gonna have one. KD, that's non-negotiable. If he's not in your top five, that means you probably you've never watched the game.
He was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's not. That's not even. That's non-negotiable. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Today's game. Second, Kawhi Leonard. It's non-negotiable. This guy is, and it's just like there's nothing else to say. Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. What are you gonna say? He don't want it. He's done it. What is it? Yeah. So that's negotiable. Now let's get to the other three spots. Until I see it, there's a couple players here who I think can do it, but I haven't seen it yet when the lights are brightest. And I just want to start off with this player, and he was on Scott's list, Anthony Edwards. I think he can do it.
Right.
But he hasn't done it yet, so he can't. I can't put him on the list.
That's fair, but what Mo said to me as a coach – who I want to do it. I'm just trusting. I get you. But that's a legit criticism of him because
I'm an Anthony Edwards fan. Mm-hmm. I don't have a doubt that he's capable of doing it. I don't have a doubt that he's going to do it. But just show me one time and then he's on the list. Non-negotiable. He's in the stash and I'm ready to move to my non-negotiable list.
Okay.
That's how much I like him. But I can't put him on there until we do it.
Okay.
I can't put him on there until we do it. Now, here's the other three names I got to add to that list. Luka Doncic is on that list. Yeah. You can say a lot of things about Luka. That man there is not afraid to take a shot. Okay.
Yeah, no question.
Now, there's one thing about Luka. I'm going to say this. Him and the word fear of taking a shot, they not in the same sentence. That man don't even turn his collar down. That man there, every time I see him, his collar is down. He don't turn down nothing. Okay, so Luka is on my list, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to put somebody on the list. I think, you know, maybe some people are going to disagree with it, but I'm going to give him the ball. I'm going to give Jokic that ball. I'm going to give him that ball. I'm giving him that ball. And as Scott know, and now our listeners should know, because this normally is a private conversation when I use this term. See, I don't give my ball just to anybody. But exactly. Jokic, he gets a pass from me, and I will live with his results. See, I don't just pass the ball to anybody and say, you know, he can get the ball, and I can live with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that gives me four right there, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last one. I got to say this one. Much debate. But it's not really debate. I'm going to give it to Steph Curry.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Interesting choice.
I'm gonna give Steph Curry my ball. Okay, and the reason I'm gonna give it to him is because one, he's earned that. He's earned that. He's earned that. He is, and you know what I love about Steph Curry that makes me say this. You know, in his career, he really, you know, he could easily say, I don't have anything to prove. And people could say, yeah, he doesn't. But he gives himself a challenge every year. And he responds to the challenge.
I mean, the Warriors front office gives him a challenge every year for the last few years playing with that squad.
And this is when I really, I've always respected his game, but this is when I really, like, I admired what he did in the finals a couple years ago.
Oh, don't remind me.
He accepted a challenge at this stage of his career, Scott. And him winning the finals meant something to him, even though he had won prior to three times before. He found a challenge in wanting to win that fourth MVP. And I can't remember which game it was, but I remember Mo and I was at that game, and Steph Curry, you can tell when something means something to somebody, Scott. You've seen that look in a player or a team. It meant something to him, not just to win, but for him to be the MVP. And I respected that, Scott. And I'm not going to discredit that, because that young man has every he's accomplished everything. He's MVP, he won a championship. But the game meant so much to him that he wanted that for his team. And he wanted to win that, to cry out the critics or whatever. And when I see a player respond to a challenge, I'm not discrediting that. So those are my five: KD, Kawhi, Jokic, Curry, Luka, and but there's another
These lists are great. One point I just want to add in putting mine together: this guy is going to have to take the shot. He doesn't have the option of passing it, right, Mo?
That's why he didn't put LeBron.
But who can score against a double team and say they run a double at you in that situation too?
Yeah,
guys still got better get the shot off, and that's the only thing. That's the only reason why I didn't put Steph on. Steph is big in those moments. He wants the ball. I get it. I'm a Steph Curry fan, so you can get me on him.
I think,
but I just wanted. If you notice my list,
you got size, except for Kyrie.
With the exception of Kyrie.
But the notable omission from both of your lists is Mr. Fourth Quarter, Mr. Dame Time.
I have two names written down here that I contemplate strong was Dame Time, and I'm going to give you another name. DeMar DeRozan. Don't sleep on him.
So here's my thing with DeMar DeRozan, right? Okay. First of all, he used to be known as DeMar DeFrozen because of the way he would freeze up in the playoffs. So you can't be on my clutch player list. Number two, he hits all these game winners now. Do you know why? Because the Bulls are always in close games. Like, if you're on a really good team, you don't need to hit 10 game winners in a season because you're chilling in the fourth quarter because you've built up a lead. So I feel like, I'm not saying he's not great at taking clutch shots at this stage of his career.
No, he is.
But
we're talking about now, today.
Yeah, he is great, and credit to him. But I don't think he's in the caliber of...
No, I didn't put him ultimately in my five.
Since Scott gave his two, I want to put my two out here because I want to put my two that's on my non-negotiable list. These are... Anthony Edwards, as I stated.
Yep.
But then there's another one that's on my list that I couldn't find a reason to knock anyone off the list, and that's Jason Tatum.
Now, I just want to put some
respect on his name because that man got 50 in a game seven.
Don't cheat him. 51.
And this man has played in big games. And he responds under duress.
And he's hit some very, very he's hit now, a game winner.
That's what I'm saying.
Over Giannis Antetokounmpo guarding him.
Now, I can't discredit JT. Everybody said, oh, but he got some little criticism or whatever last week or whatever. Unless I missed something, that man got 50 in a game seven, 51. So I don't have any questions. I'm just waiting on JT to go ahead and win it so I can figure out how to make an argument to put him on my list. Because he needs to be on my list. And Anthony Edwards needs to be on my list. And I need to put them too, because I would give them two the ball at any time to go get a bucket.
Oh, no question.
And just go 1-4 flat. Now, I know the play. I would be a genius of a coach coaching them two guys. I'm going 1-4 flat.
Well, for what it's worth, I've got Kawhi, Luka, KD, Dame, and Kyrie. That's my five.
Okay.
It's got me thinking, if we expand the category to any player who's ever played in the NBA, how many of your current players remain in your all-time top five? Scott, what's your all-time top five?
Hold on. So me and Scott don't have to repeat. Scott, just give me your three, because I know they're going to be the same as my three. I know there's got to be three on the list.
Well, first,
it's got
to
be
star three. Star five, and then we go up to one.
No, but he won. I'm going to give you the three.
That's not negotiable.
Okay. I can give you the numbers. I don't even have to give you the name. You're going to know. 23.
Everyone knows who 23 is.
23, exactly. Everybody knows who 23. Yeah, 23.
But there's only one.
Then I'm going to give you another one. Pick your number, 8 or 24.
Right. 28,
however you want to go. Mr. Kobe Bryant. And I'm going to give you another one. I got to give you another. He's on BJ's back wall there that we see in that green way. That Larry Bird was a success.
Okay.
Those are the three.
Those are non-negotiable. I don't care who you are, where you're from. If those three not on your list, let's just keep the train moving. Okay. Now we got that out of the way, Mo. Now let's talk about the other two. If there is another two.
Yeah, you got two more spots. You got two more spots.
No, everybody only has two more spots. Those three
on my list, I've got Jordan 1, Larry Bird 2, and Kobe at 3. That's my list.
Okay.
But four and five.
Okay, well, let's go 4 or 5.
We need to debate this here.
Yes.
Scott, talk to me. Number 4 and number 5. Tell me both names.
Wow.
You ask about somebody
in the current era. And I know I might be a little biased here, but I'm going to keep Kevin Durant on that list. I'm going to keep Kevin Durant on my list.
That's big time.
There hasn't been a more efficient shooter score in this league.
Don't tell that to George Gervin.
Well, I mean, stats wise.
And he's another one I thought about on my list. Don't get me wrong, that George Gervin. Now, I'm just giving KD the slight edge because he's 7 feet.
Okay.
And can do what George did. And he can get his shot off at any time against anybody, anywhere. KD's going to do it in the NBA game. He's going to do it in the summer league game. He's going to do it at the park.
Is he going to do it when he's up 3-1 for the Oklahoma City against the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs, or is he going to throw away a 3-1 lead? That's my question. That's why, if we're talking all-time killers.
Oh, I get it.
Top five is a big honor.
I went between he and Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk was a clutch player, and he had that run, But KD could just do, he does more off the bounce than Dirk could. Dirk could get to the spots, and he was super clutch. So he was somebody I thought about, but I opted for KD. Now, BJ got another guy on behind him that was super clutch, but because he wasn't the same level of score, I had to X him off. But I thought about him. Was that Magic Johnson in the back?
Yeah.
I thought about it. But I'm going to go old school. I'm going to bring us some old school listeners here. And I'm going to go to the Big Apple and one Walt Frazier.
Next fan's going to have this.
There wasn't a cooler customer back in the 70s, and I haven't seen a cooler customer in 2024. When the pressure was on, that man performed. He wasn't afraid of the big moment, the big lights, two-time champion with the Knicks. I know it's well before a lot of people's time, but give me Walt Frazier.
Okay. BJ, 4 and 5. Only two, so history. Many names. 4 and 5.
Yes, 4 and 5. Okay. So this is how I thought about my list. I said, you know, the one thing, as the listeners know and you guys both know about me, the one thing I value, if you're going to win, because winning is, to me, it's that's the only reason I played, was I just wanted to win. And I love people who value winning. And if you're going to win, you got to be able to defend. So I tried to put together all of my thoughts to say, who would be the most difficult people to defend? And there's only a couple of spots on the floor where you can't defend, right? Okay. You can't defend a player who can operate from the elbows. That's the one area on the floor where you can't double team. Okay, I can double team a guy on the post. I can double team a guy on the wing. I can double team a, you know, at the top of the floor, top of the key, the backcourt. But if he's operating from the pinch post, you can't double team there. And you can't double team a guy who can attack the basket. And once he gets his feet in the lane, I mean, once he's in the lane, he's in the lane. So I said, okay, that's how I built. And I said, I got to find players who are versatile enough to perform like a hybrid player. That to me is what, that's the mark of a great player.
Okay.
Okay. So that's
my, I love this, because my logic for my next two picks is completely different.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Okay. So that's my logic. Okay. So MJ, he started this modern, you know, he was a two, but he played like a big. He played from different players on the floor. He can play full court, half court, however you want to do it, he's going to give it to you. Larry Bird, another hybrid player. Like, ultimate. You know, he's probably the ultimate hybrid player because he could shoot it with distance, da-da-da. Kobe Bryant, you say Michael Jordan, same. Okay. Now, this fourth player for me is Tim Duncan. Because Tim Duncan played at the elbow, and then he did something that was just fascinating to me. Still, I've never seen anyone do it. It's kind of, he did something that reminds me the same as the sky hook. He played on the post, and then he would let you push him off the post so he can get the ankle to shoot a backboard shot. And that made teams, they didn't know whether they should double team him or not, because he was playing in what I just termed a gray area. It was like, he wasn't on the post, but he had that backboard shot and he could play at the elbow at the end of the game, which you couldn't double team him from, which to me, that's what gave him to me the advantage over a Kareem, for instance, or Wilt Chamberlain, because they couldn't play from the pinch post.
He's got the face up game going.
Well, and then it's just
he gives you a little fake and you jump to try and contest that bank shot, he's going right by you, dunking them.
You can't double team from that one step off the post.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's just too hard to defend. Like, as a team defensive, if you're defending him, how are you going to double team him one step off the post? Like, it's just a gray area. It was like a genius type thing thinking. Like, he knew that you couldn't double team him, so he just did it and he perfected it. And then finally, the one guy that I saw that was just incredible. He was so unorthodox that I don't even know how to really term it, is Dream.
Hakeem.
I didn't really, because he played for them, like Dream had a handle. Okay. Mm-hmm. He didn't. And to me, having to defend those five guys would just be a nightmare.
No, you know, it's funny. I looked at those bigs and I just kind of went away from the bigs just because, you know.
Because you could get them on the box.
You get them on the box, yeah. Because they played a lot on the box. And, you know, the ones you mentioned, I mean, you know, obviously we played Tim Duncan in the finals one year. And he, just watching him in the 7-game series, man, and we had bigs and we could defend. But boy, he was surgical off that glass. He was tough in that area that you talked about, man. It
was so unique because you couldn't. Yeah. No. So MJ would play in the post. And then once the fourth quarter began, he would move to the pinch post and you couldn't double team him. You can't double team a player at the pinch post.
Yeah.
It's impossible. So those
are
my five.
But that requires a good guard to get him the ball. I watched the NBA now. Well, no one can even make a post entry pass. You're assuming.
See, that's why I went away.
That's what I'm saying, Scott. We were
saying the pitch.
Just keep the ball on his own.
Yeah.
And you got 10 seconds to work.
You can double a guy on the post, but the pinch post is different than the post.
No, I agree with what you're saying there. I guess I just, when we took this exercise.
We talk about you just walking the ball up, 10, 9, 8, going to your shot, pulling up, getting a bucket, going to the hoop, whatever it might be. But BJ, my criteria.
Okay. I'm going to hear your criteria.
Let me tell you mine.
I'm going to name one center, though, real quick, Mo.
Okay.
If you talk about
tell me your center. Tell me your center. I've not got a big in my list. So while we on center, go ahead.
Just in terms of, this is not my, I didn't make the list because somebody had to get him the ball. But you talking about just clutch, shot maker in the clutch? You got to think about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, but you had to, you know, get him the ball. So there was a lot of that's why I just kind of excused the centers from my experience.
So here is my criteria. And this is why for the current players, I said Dame, because what I love about Dame is like some of those shots that he hit were really personal and he gave him the little wave off the court. And I don't think it's enough to just win a game. If I'm out there, I want to completely and utterly humiliate and destroy you if you're my opponent. So that's why the top three we have, Jordan, Kobe, and Bird. Larry Bird would tell guys as they're coming out of timeout where he's going to catch the ball from, how many dribbles he's going to take, where the shot's going from, and the defender would still be helpless and wouldn't be able to do it. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, they're two dogs as well. They'll talk their talk to their opponent. So a player that I've got there is Reggie Miller, who's made some huge shots over his career. He talked his talk as well. Because if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk. And another name that's going to get me killed in the Instagram comments, because we have a whole new generation of NBA fans who didn't watch this man in his prime. They only watched him when he was old and about to retire, who hit my favorite game-winning shot of all time. The one and only truth, Mr. Paul Pierce. Because I watched a man count down 20 seconds off the shot clock, dribbling the ball while talking smack, and then just let it fly. That's my criteria, because I don't just want to win. Like, I love Tim Duncan, don't get me wrong. But Tim Duncan is hitting the game-winning shot, shaking your hand, saying good game, and walking off like nothing happened. I don't want that. I want a dog talking smack. No, I want to destroy you. I want to humiliate you. I want the highlight to live forever. So the one thing you're most known for is having that game winner scored against you.
Let me ask you this about Reggie Miller. Because Reggie Miller was super clutch. Don't get me wrong. But if my memory serves me correctly, a lot of times, the majority of his game winners come off of running Reggie off actions.
Off in the pitch.
Single, double screens. So again, he's a name I thought in terms of clutch performers, but he, like the centers a lot of time, was dependent upon somebody.
So I thought about that.
You weren't going to put Reggie
at the top
1-4 flat.
Oh, no, of course not. But what I thought about was he did hit some huge shots, maybe not the game winners, but huge shots down the stretch coming off the dribble. And then when the team gets the chance for the timeout, advance the ball, then he's coming off the screens and hitting. I thought about putting Ray Allen up there. Because obviously he's most known for his catch and shoot with Miami, but throughout his career, he was an elite shot maker. There's so many players that we could have included on this list. Yeah. Let us know in the Discord or on social media who your top five are. But the top three are undisputable. Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. Whoever the other two are, it doesn't really matter. That's why I'm just what I like watching. You know what I'm saying? I like a little trash talk. We didn't even mention Tracy McGrady with that 13 points in 33 seconds, one of the most clutch performances ever. There's too many.
If you're gonna go there, you got to go to Isaiah Thomas's performance in the playoff game in Detroit.
Talk to him, Scotty. Get Mo on YouTube tonight.
Like 24 points in a couple minutes.
Okay.
He didn't do it in a regular season game. He did this in the playoffs.
No question. Game five. Downtown Detroit. They moved that game.
You want to do clutch performances now, Mo. You know what I mean? But I was going to let it slide. Scott brought it up.
I just came back from Detroit too, Mo.
Maybe Scott would be nice enough to come on after you read this and say, after you see it, then you come back on and then say, I'm sorry, Scott. I'm sorry.
You got to go look at that performance from Isaiah, and you got to go look at Isaiah's performance on one leg in the NBA Finals against Los Angeles Lakers.
Okay, well, let's end the show right there. You know the vibe. You know the vibe.
That's the start of the show. That's the start of the show. That's not the end of the show.
Exactly.
Let us know, Discord, social media, your top five clutch players all time, top five clutch players right now. We'll see who comes out on top in the NBA playoffs as the most clutch player this season, who can carry their team to those all important 16 wins. I would ask you guys which teams you're looking at this week, but we're at the point in the season where you got to lock in with every team because the playoffs around the corner, the Western
Somebody
Conference.
Somebody said New Orleans last week. Who said New Orleans last week?
Someone. Last week was a long time ago, brother. Was it you?
Exactly. No, I just said New Orleans, man. They got me. They playing well.
Hey, all I'm saying.
What do you say?
I'm a bigger brother, so I gotta always defend my boy Zion. And just remember, just 2 months ago, on this show, I told you, each and every one of you, all of you in the media, Stephen A. Smith, all of you guys in the media, Zion Williamson is out of shape. Zion Williamson. Now, all you fans tweeting, look at how the kid's playing now. Look at the stats that he's putting up. Look at the performances. I saw that man go full court and score a buzzer beating shot in 3.5 seconds. And then you're going to come online and tweet about Zion needs to stop eating cheeseburgers. Have some shame. Now, I just think, you know, I hate to be the guy who says I told you so, but I told you I ain't worried about the kid. And here we are.
Right. No, he's playing terrific. And I'm happy for the young man because he's had a tough way to go early on. I mean, he's super talented, but he's had to fight through some adversity. Yeah, but it's always good to see a player to go.
You know. It's because we live in a world now where fans and media have unrealistic expectations of players at a ridiculously young age. Like, you see this season, all the talk is, oh, you know, Jason Tatum needs to win a championship. He's choked so many times. No, he's 25, just turned 26, got to the conference finals a whole bunch of times, got to the NBA finals. Most guys don't win championships, like we said a few weeks ago, until they're 28, 29. I just think unrealistic expectations. Zion's out there. He's healthy. He's playing. He's balling. I'm locked in with the Pelicans. Okay. And here's a hot take for you. If they see the Clippers in the first round, they're beating the Clippers in that first round. And your boys in LA are going home early.
I got both started. I got it started. Ladies and gentlemen, I got it started.
if the playoffs started today,
they that 4-5 matchup.
4-5 matchup.
The system can be back in Houston for the summer.
I would go to that game. I think that would be a terrific matchup.
It'd be a great series.
Absolutely. Any other teams you guys are going to keep an eye on this week?
Yeah. We've spent a lot of time on the Western Conference. I'm going to go back over to the East. I'm going to go look at the Indiana Pacers again. They've just quietly got back to the sixth seed. Big week coming up. Before they go out West, I know they go out West at the end of the week. I think they play the Lakers and the Kings possibly. But this is a big week for them. We're going to see that trade that they made for Pascal Siakam. How's that going to pay off?
About the Pacers? I think the trading away of Buddy Hield was a much bigger detriment to them than they anticipated it to be. Because now Tyrese Haliburton isn't getting that same level of space because now he's their best three-point shooter. You know, I think they underestimated the impact that Buddy Hield had on Tyrese Haliburton's game.
Great point. But I want to see what they're made of now. Because then they got a few home games. You know, I think they have Detroit this week at some point. But those games you got to win.
Yep. They got the Cavs. They got the Pistons, then the Warriors.
They got to win their home games before heading out West and have at least a 500 West Coast trip if they want to remain out of the play-in tournament. Because you got Miami nipping at their heels along with Philadelphia, but they're still without Embiid. So really, Miami is the one. So they're going to be jockeying right there, 6 and 7, Miami and
I'm watching the New York Knicks. My boy OG's come back, and it looks like they just can't really lose whenever he's healthy and playing. I don't know how his elbow's holding up. It looked like it was troubling him a bit, but the Eastern Conference, it isn't quite as exciting as the West because the Celtics have just run away with it, but anywhere between 2 and 6 could really be up for grabs. You know, the Bucks, they've won their last two, but
let me ask you guys, who is in your mind right now, who's the biggest challenge for the Celtics in the East?
If the Knicks get healthy, it's the Knicks.
You say the Knicks.
If they got Julius and OG, and if they get Mitchell Robinson, that's a major problem. But even without Mitchell Robinson, if the rest of the roster is healthy, I think the Knicks are the biggest challenge for the Celtics in the East.
BJ?
You know, with the exception of Jason Tatum is going to be the best player on the floor in every series except the Milwaukee Bucks.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say Milwaukee just because of Giannis. Giannis is a problem. Even though this Milwaukee team, I don't know what you guys think about the season. This has been a, you know, sometimes you'll have a great record. Like they're like 15 to 20 games or so over 500. But this has been a challenging season for them in many ways. Yeah. You know, it's like one of those things like, you know, you'll look at their record. I don't know. They'll win 50 games this year. And as you know, 50 games is always a barometer for a lot of people in this league. And they'll probably win 50, 55 games or something. But then in many ways, it's been like a draining of a season for them. It's like nothing has been easy for them. They've had this coaching change that seems like just hanging over their head. But I can't count him out because he's too great of a player. I watched Miami play the last two games. It just don't do it for me, Scott. Like Miami, I think finally it's caught up with them playing from behind. Always making a run late. You know what I mean? That's just always, I think it's finally caught up with him.
I hope you're right.
I would agree with that.
I'm not disrespecting him, but it just, no. At some point, you get down big.
I think the biggest threat to the Celtics is Porzingis staying healthy. I'm more worried about that than any of the other teams because that changes the whole dynamic of everything. But we're going to dive into that next time Scott's on the show. Okay. So we'll lock in. We're just now, 3 weeks away from the end of the regular season?
Wow. Yeah.
Yep. And I said once again this season, I was like, I'm going to fix my sleeping pattern. I'm going to go to bed early, wake up early and catch up on the games. And here we are, 3 weeks away from the playoffs and not a damn thing's changed and I'm still awake all night. So another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, another week of sleep deprivation. So make sure you please subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Join the Discord server and we'll be back. Me and VJ will be back tomorrow. Scott will be back with us as soon as he possibly can. Scott, once again, congratulations for you and your championship-winning team in 2004.
Congrats. The champ is here.
Show Scott some love on social media. And until next time, you guys know the vibes. Get buckets.